This Is Your Life, Season 1, Episode 11. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name is Michelle Cachette, and I'm your co-host today, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hi,
hey,
Michael.
Michelle.
So as we all know, the marketplace is crowded. In fact, every day it seems to get more and more crowded, right?
Absolutely. More noise than ever before, more distractions, more channels. Yeah, lots of stuff.
And it's so hard for those of us that are trying to build a business in this very crowded marketplace to get our message, what we have to offer, what we really believe in, to get it to stand out and get noticed, get heard. Regardless of how unique we think our offering is, I mean, there's really nothing new under the sun, right? There's
a
good chance there's somebody that's doing at least something similar.
Yep.
We try to innovate, but there is. So how do we get ourselves to stand out? And that's where we start talking about the idea of a personal brand, about branding. Now, I live in Colorado, as you know. And in Colorado, we do have lots of ranches everywhere. And so when I think of brand, I think of that little, what do you call it? See, I'm not a rancher.
I can see that.
But, you know, a brand is something that ranchers use to mark their livestock with a symbol or some kind of maybe the initials of their name or whatever it may be to mark it as theirs. I mean, that's what the brand is all about. So that way people know that they own it. When it comes to our brand, we do something similar. We don't mark ourselves. You don't have an MH logo on your arm, do you?
Not even a tattoo.
Not even a tattoo.
Although that's a good idea.
But when it comes to branding, our business, our brand is how we package what we offer. We market so that way it's unique to us. And in a sense, the world knows that we own it, right?
Right.
Did I explain that well?
Yeah. I think a brand is certainly something we own, but it's also something we stand for. You know, when I think of the world's greatest brands, when I think of Apple Computer, for example, I think of computers for the rest of us. You know, computers that are easy to use, that are intuitive, that are simple, that don't have a lot of junk on it that I don't need. You know, it's something I can get my work done with. So that's what they stand for. Or if I think of Nike, I think of a brand that's about just doing it. You know, athletic wear that doesn't get in my way, that helps me just do it. So yeah, it's what we own. It's what we stand for. It's what people remember us for. You know, I did that on the fly. I didn't have notes on that, but I just thought of those brands and that's what I think of because that's how I remember them.
So it's accomplished what it set out.
Yep.
So without a brand, what is the risk? What can happen to us as leaders or entrepreneurs, business people?
Yeah, that we'll basically stand for nothing. People won't know what we stand for. We'll be undifferentiated in the market and we'll be therefore forgettable. We'll be overlooked.
So now you've worked for a long time to establish your brand. How would you describe your brand?
Well, I think my brand is really about, as we said at the top of the show, doing what matters. You know, life is not about drifting and about going with the current, but it's about being intentional and being proactive and doing what matters most, not just getting things done. And this was an important distinction for me in the evolution of my brand. I wasn't just about productivity and getting things done, but I want to get the right things done and I want to help the people that I communicate with get the right things done.
So the brand not only communicates to your audience, but also helps you kind of stay on track of what you're all about.
Totally. In fact, I would say that the biggest benefit of a brand when you understand the brand is it's an internal guidance system that keeps everybody aligned and everybody moving on script, so to speak.
Okay. All right. So now, did you establish a brand? Is it something you sat down one day and say, oh, I think this is going to be my brand?
Well, yeah, I did do that. And that lasted about 2 years. So if you go back and, you know, I'd encourage people to do this, but if you go back in a service that you can find on Google called the Wayback Machine, I think it's just found at archive.org. We'll put the correct link, if that's not it, in the show notes. But essentially what you can do is you can go back and see how websites appeared, the same website, the URL like michaelhyatt.com, how it appeared all the way back to the inception.
Oh, that's almost painful.
Totally painful. It's embarrassing because you'll see if you do that on my own particular brand that when I started, I had a blog on Typepad called Working Smarter. And it was all about productivity. And I was really interested in productivity. But after about 2 years, I got bored. And then I decided, because now by this time I was now the president of Thomas Nelson Publishers, wasn't the CEO yet, but I was the president. I thought I'd give people a peek behind the curtain of publishing, the mysterious world of publishing. And so I had a blog called From Where I Sit, still under, all under Michael Hyatt, but totally different branding. And then I was learning so much about leadership in my role that I thought, well, publishing doesn't really say it either. What I'm really interested in now, this is a couple years later, was about leading on purpose. So for a while, that was kind of what my brand was about. And then it evolved from there. So even though I thought I knew what the brand was, it revealed itself over time. And I'm pretty sure that whatever I have now, what I do have now, is probably not the end game. It'll continue to evolve.
Yeah, I've noticed the same even with my own brand, that it evolves over time. And it, you know, I just didn't know on the first day or the first year.
What did you start with? I've told my story.
You know, I'm trying to remember. I don't even know that I remember. Something similar to like Dare to Live or something like that. So there was kind of a thread.
Kind of inspirational.
Yeah, somewhat inspirational. But I didn't really know what that, you know, it was kind of nebulous. You know, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
You know, and what does that look like? What am I offering? And so it really took some time. Actually, it took some blogging and writing because that's how I process in order for me to kind of identify what my brand is all about. I guess you just answered this. Do you have a brand that, does it stay, or is it something where you need to periodically evaluate and see if you need a rebrand?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is that as your interests change and evolve and you get new information, you might find yourself getting more narrowly niched or more focused on the core audience that you're after, and that certainly happened to me. I distinguish between branding and rebranding in this way. A rebrand is just kind of like a brand refresh, where maybe the graphics that you've used, to pick an example, are no longer current. So for a while, Apple used the kind of graphic design in all their brands. They call it, skeuomorphism?
Okay.
Can't believe I pulled that out.
Yeah, I can't believe you. Can you spell it?
Yeah, no. Okay. I would flunk the spelling bee. But it's basically where you take objects from the physical world and you give them a representation in the digital world so that they look like their physical counterparts. You create, for example, the illusion of 3D.
Okay.
Well, then just recently, or not too long ago, maybe about a year ago, Apple came out with, I think it was iOS 7, and they said, forget skeuomorphism. We're going to go to this flat design. Why do we need to replicate in the digital world what's in the real world? This is an entire world of its own. And so that explains all the flat design, which is all the rage now when people are rebranding websites and a lot of design is picking up on this. But that's not really, doesn't change anything about the brand. It's simply a refresh so that it's more current and communicates with people where they are.
So as we began this whole conversation, our goal is to help you build your brand because obviously if you don't have kind of your own unique signature in the marketplace, both for yourself and for your audience, you'll be kind of like a rudderless ship.
Right.
Right?
You got to go first. You got to tell people what you're about, what you stand for. And that's really the art of branding. Because if you don't do that, then people will, it's not like you won't have a brand because you will have a reputation. People will just formulate their own opinion of what you're about. So you've got to drive the narrative. And that's really what branding is about, driving that narrative.
Okay. So whether, for those who are listening, whether you are doing a rebrand, like you're kind of trying to reinvent yourself or rediscover exactly where you're headed, or you're developing a brand for the first time, why don't you tell us how to do that?
Yeah. There's something that I do at Platform University. Actually, my daughter Megan and I do this because she's the dean of Platform University, but we do something called a member makeover. And so once a month, people from our community volunteer to have us review their online platform and their brand. And I still can't believe that people do this because it's not always a pleasant process because we tend to be pretty hard on them, though I hope gracious when we do it. But what we found is that we keep coming back to the same five elements that have to be present in a brand for it to be powerful. And if one of these is missing, it can really handicap you in a significant way. So that's how I think about it, is around this framework of these five elements of a powerful personal brand.
Okay, five elements. Walk us through those.
Okay. Element number one is a defined audience. And this is where it starts. This is the reason it's number one, is because it is the priority. People try to create a brand without consideration of their existing audience. And it may be that you only have an audience of five, or it may be 5,000, or it may be 5 million, but you've got to get in touch with who the audience is. Now, I had this experience as a blogger when I started in 2004, where, you know, the first year I had on average about 100 monthly unique visitors, and then it doubled the next year and doubled the next year. But it took me 4 years to get over 1,000 readers a month. And then it really took off.
4 years. For those of you who just started blogging, 4 years.
I know. I was in the slow class.
No. I mean, it takes that long. It really does.
Well, it's faster today. It's faster today because if I had known then what I know now, it would have been faster. And there's a lot of people that have done it faster. But that's how long it took. Mm-hmm. But I hit an inflection point in 2008 when my traffic suddenly spiked to an average of 20,000 monthly unique visitors. And the reason that happened is because I went through a Copernican revolution. I was at the center of my blogging universe prior to that, where I was talking about what was important to me, why I cared, and it was all about me. And in the early days of blogging, it was all about journaling online. So
it was web blog, right. You know, an online. Yeah, exactly.
But in 2008, I went through this shift where I said, okay, forget me. What's important to my audience? Why should they care? Because as it turns out, most people are tuned in, and this is the most popular radio station on earth, WIIFM. What's in it for me? And so when you can tune into that as a content creator or as a brand builder and say, how can I articulate this in terms of what's in it for them, everything changes. So what we recommend at Platform University and what I would recommend to the people who are listening, a simple reader survey or a listener survey or a customer survey, something that gives the people you're trying to connect with a voice into the process. That's where I would begin. And I recommend and use a product called SurveyMonkey. I don't have an affiliate deal with them, but I use them and it's not very expensive. But once a year, I do a reader survey, and I simply post that on my site. I invite people to participate. But here's what I don't say. I don't say, you know, come fill out my 53-question survey. What I say is, I'm committed to creating the best product I can for you. So help me help you by responding to this brief survey, and that'll give me the information I need to make sure that I'm meeting your needs. So I'm framing even the ask on the survey from the reader's or the customer's perspective. Then, in addition to that, I pull all that information together once I've got the survey results, which, by the way, can be astonishing. I mean, the information
I bet it's surprising. I bet there are, I mean, there's some things I'm sure that are expected, but there's got to be tons of information that comes through that you didn't expect.
Well, there is, and I meant to cover this, so let me go back and grab it. I asked two kinds of questions. I want to find out demographic information, which is the basic statistical information, things like gender, age, education, marital status, occupation, income, so forth. That's demographic information. That's helpful, but it's not the most useful. What I'm really after is the psychographic information. Mm-hmm. What makes people do what they do? And in particular, I'm looking for their challenges. I'm looking for their aspirations, and I'm looking for their habits. And people that are listening to this can go to my reader survey, my most recent one, which was in 2013, and you can actually see the questions that I ask. And unfortunately, I did ask 53. Now, I can do that because I have a longstanding relationship with my customers or with my readers, and they'll do that. I would recommend not going above about 10 or 12 questions, but ask open-ended questions.
Is that 10 to 12 questions including the demographic questions as well?
Yep.
I mean, total.
Yep. Start small till you build trust,
Got
and then
it.
You can go deeper. But even with that, I had like 3,500 people respond to it. So it's a lot of information. But ask open-ended questions. So questions that say, you know, what are your pain points? What do you struggle with on a regular basis? And let them tell you, because not only are you looking for the information, and this is key, you're looking for the language they use to describe the problem they have. Or you're looking for the language that they use to describe the dream they have. Because when you create the content, when you create your brand, you want them to feel like, oh my gosh, he's reading my mail. You know, how's he inside my head? You know, how does he realize what I'm thinking? When you do that, you create a connection and you create the element, this first element of a powerful personal brand.
So when you talk about defining your audience as part of this, you know, that first key element of defining your personal brand, you're not just talking about male, female, old, young. I mean, you really are getting into kind of the heart and the mind of your audience. So you truly could, your typical audience member, it looks like this, and you could describe that person to me.
Yeah, you can even go the extra step of that too, which is creating a customer avatar or avatars, you know, customers that are sort of your typical customer, so that when I'm writing an article, I know that I'm writing to Fred And I've got the demographic and the psychographic description of him, so I know exactly what that target is.
It's so interesting because we do this in the writing world. When we write books, we do something similar. We really try to think about who is the person that I'm writing this for, who is my audience.
But it's a similar process.
I mean, it really is. Yeah. And anytime you have and it's just another product, right? Your blog and a book, whatever it is, you design it with that person in mind. And the more information you have, the better you can craft that in order to meet their needs.
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay, what's the second element of a personal brand?
The second element, once you know who your audience is and that's defined, then you need to move to a clear value proposition. And this is where you decide and determine what it is that you have to offer to this audience, because it's all about serving the audience and adding value to that audience segment. And so what you're after is something that clearly differentiates you in a very crowded world where people are suffering from a lack of time. And so I've got something that I call the value equation that I encourage. We've taken clients through this. We've done this at Platform University. But here's what it looks like. The value equation, if I had to spell it out, and I actually have a graphic that shows this, which you won't be able to see. But actually, maybe we could do this on the video. We could show this on the video. So your professional identity, I'm going to give you an example in a minute, so just write this down if you're listening. Your professional identity plus the target audience plus your unique solution equals your specific transformation. People don't buy products. They don't buy services. They buy a transformation that they expect as a result of using your product or your service. So let me say it another way. Here's something I call, and this is very similar, but a core value proposition template. And so as you begin to give language to this and begin to express it, here's what it might look like. I am, and this is your professional identity. I help, and this is your target audience. Do or understand, this is your unique solution. So, and this is your promised transformation. So that all sounds probably pretty abstract, pretty ethereal. So let me give it something concrete. You want to be able to repeat this, if you had to, at a cocktail party or at a mixer.
Yeah, when people ask, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you do?
Which is, you get asked that all the time. You have to be prepared to answer that.
That's right. So here's an example from somebody named Jackie, who's one of our clients. I'm a speaker and trainer. I help school administrators inspire their students to strive for a big future so they have a reason to make wise choices today.
Oh, nice.
So she was trying to sell an anti-drug program, and she was trying to give the vision to principals and superintendents, and that's what she came up with. Here's another one. This is Enrique. He had once said, I'm an author and a speaker. I help motivated but overwhelmed husbands and fathers learn how to lead and love their families so they can have lasting, fulfilling marriages and meaningful influence on their kids.
I like that. I like, you know, because he creates a sense of tension in the beginning by connecting with the overwhelmed.
Yes.
But connect, you know, the father that wants to do really well, but he's overwhelmed.
Understands his audience.
Yeah. Yep. So he's got a connection with the tension there. And then he has a deliverable, a promise at the end.
Here's another one. This is one of my favorite ones. This happens to be Sean Lemon, my son-in-law. Megan and I worked with him as he was starting his new business. But he said, I'm a technology lifestyle coach. I design custom productivity systems for successful but overwhelmed business leaders so they can regain a sense of control and focus on what matters most.
Oh, nice.
SeanLemon.com. Had to get
You're
that plug
welcome,
in.
You're welcome, Sean.
So you want that? You want to literally write this out. And I'm going to tell you, this takes a lot of work. Of all the things that we do in our work, when we're helping companies with branding or helping individuals with branding, getting this clear value proposition is the most difficult, but the most important. And usually you need some help. Maybe some people that are part of your team. Maybe some people that are outsiders. I couldn't even do this for myself. I had to bring in some other people to
figure
it out.
I'm the same. I need some other sources to help kind of reflect it back to me, talk, get it going. Because I'm
kind of wear
much,
it for a while.
Yeah, because I'm too much in my head when I try to come up with those kind of things. I need somebody else. How much time are you talking? You said it can take a long time.
Well, you know, you can do this in a couple hours. Like that one that we did with Sean, he came over to the house one day and he said, guys, I really need some help figuring this out. He'd heard me talk about this. And I said, great. So it probably took us maybe 2 hours. We played with a couple of different things. We got it on a whiteboard. We crossed things out, tried different things. And then he sat with it for maybe 2 weeks, and he made some tweaks and came back to us and said, what do you think of this? And we said, buddy,
nice,
you nailed it.
He got gold. Good.
And it's driving his business. Because when he articulates that, people go, oh, I need a lifestyle technology coach.
Because he's done such a great job connecting with the needs of the audience and then delivering exactly what they need.
Yep.
Exactly. Okay. So that is the second element of developing a personal brand. Take us to the third.
Okay. The third element is a compelling brand slogan. So as we said, we live in a busy, noisy world where people's attention spans are growing shorter by the year. Mm-hmm. When they hit your website, if they don't see something with which they connect immediately, I mean, you got like 2 seconds to live, they bounce off because there are too many other squirrels in cyberspace, you know, squirrel, and they're off to the next thing. So a tagline is one way to grab that. And so when we're talking about taking that defined audience, the value proposition, and reducing it to a tagline, what we recommend is that you start first with a verb or a gerund. And I'm going to give you some examples so you don't have to know what those terms mean necessarily.
For those that are grammar challenged like me.
Yeah. So, you know, it could be as simple as this. Let's just take this website, one of my favorite websites, Michelle Cachat.
Aww.
And Michelle starts with a gerund, making, you know, it's a verb with an ing on the end, making peace with an imperfect life. Now, if I'm someone who is trying to manage a family that's not perfect, with career and a very entrepreneurial husband like you have, and I see this tagline, I go, bingo, this is for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm somebody trying to make peace with an imperfect life. I love your tagline.
Thank you.
That's so awesome.
Thank you.
Michelle
it took a while to come up with that, but although I am thinking about changing a couple of words, but it's still going to be mostly the same.
Okay, here's another gerund. Our friend Chris Licurdo, we use his example everywhere, but finding the life and business you really want.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
finding, again, that ing.
Gerund, that's right. So if you're after that, then that would make sense. Here's another example, and this is just a simple verb. This is Seth Godin. Go make something happen.
Oh, I like that.
I do too. Simple, minimal.
You know, both Chris and Seth, they, you know, well, Chris had the word you, the life you really want.
Yeah.
Which I really like that. But go make something happen is implied in that as well.
It is. One last example I'll give you is from Mixergy, from my friend Andrew Warner. I'm in a mastermind with Andrew. And he's got this tagline for Mixergy, learn from proven entrepreneurs. He's done like over 1,000 interviews, video interviews with entrepreneurs. And so learn from proven entrepreneurs. For somebody like me that's an entrepreneur, I want that. Bing. I'm on this right
You know,
side.
Even having that proven word in there just ups the tension a little bit more. You know, kind of the hook. It makes me go, proven entrepreneurs. Okay, I'm in.
So that's another example of something that you're not going to just get this probably in 15 minutes of thinking about
it.
You got to play with it. You got to test it. I've gone through so many taglines in my own blog. But to get to one that really has power takes some time, just like the value proposition.
And it's interesting how just, you know, choosing those, it may only be a handful of words, but, you know, I think it's interesting being a writer, a wordsmithy kind of person, you know, just the right word with the right consonant, all of that kind of matters. So you play with it and you toy with it and you test it on different people and eventually you get there, but it takes some time.
It takes a little bit of time.
Yep. Okay. So far, as far as these five elements, we have defined audience, a clear value proposition, a compelling brand slogan. What's next?
Number four is an engaging headshot. In this particular case, we're talking about personal brands. And I say personal, I don't mean that it's unrelated to your corporation. Mm-hmm. When I was at Thomas Nelson, I built a personal brand there that I think really enhanced the value of the company, frankly, because I gave a face and a name, a personality, and a voice to the corporate brand. Before that—
You made it human.
I made it human, exactly. Before that, it was basically a company that was founded in 1798 that had a wonderful history, but was pretty forgettable. I mean, in the sense that it didn't have that personality, and there was no point of connection with it. But when I started blogging and when I started getting involved in social media, all of a sudden people began to care about the company at a deeper level because they cared about me or felt connected to me. So an engaging headshot's important because if you realize that you're either the spokesperson or you are the brand, like now, I am the brand for my brand, you know? So an engaging headshot is essentially the packaging of that product. It's hard if you're trying to be, it's probably hard for you to think of yourself as the product.
Yeah, it is. I'd rather, you know, my message, I think of my message. But yet, you know, people, I was just thinking as you were talking, people don't connect with corporations, they connect with people.
They do.
And same with products. People don't connect with products, they connect with people.
Well, and they'll never get to the product unless they get through the person.
Exactly.
And like in your
case,
that's
where the connection, that's where the handshake happens. That's where the relationship happens.
And like in your case, the headshot is like the packaging of a product. And if I like the headshot, And by the way, this doesn't mean a beautiful glamour headshot.
Yeah, it's we're not talking glamour shots here.
No, we're definitely not talking that. We're talking about, and when I say a great headshot, a headshot that when the people who love you the most look at it, they go, oh, that's you. Because it represents your personality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so true. And that can take several shots to make that happen. So it's not going to just be, you know, there have been times in the past where it was my mom with the camera taking my picture for
sure,
me.
Sure, I've done those too.
Because that's where I was in my business. But now it's a necessary business expense for me to have a quality photographer taking a headshot that captures my personality and who I am. Because if it isn't really me, and I've had some headshots where my husband looked at it, he's actually the best person to do this for me. He'll look at it and say, that's not you. I don't like that. And then if I have a picture and he's like, oh yeah, that's you, then I know I've got the right thing.
Yeah, no, that's the way to do it. I do the same thing with Gail and with my kids. But what you're after in the right kind of headshot is what photographers call the Duchenne smile, where it's not that fakey, cheesy, I hate to say this, Olin Mills kind of photography.
Sorry, Olin Mills. But yeah, yes. Sorry. Well, I mean, it's just not quite so posed. And
Yeah. It's genuine, where you're laughing from the eyes, the corners of your lips are turned up. And, you know, it's just that big, genuine smile. Because it feels warm, it feels authentic, it's inviting, it draws people in. And that's what you're after in your photography. And good photographers will catch that. In fact, one of the things I like to say is the key to get an engaging headshot, be engaged. You know, in other words, you've got to be not just posing. Think of that word, by the way, posing, you know, pretending. No, engaged. You know, I'm going to be really engaged in this. I'm going to go into this headshot with, or this photography session with my heart wide open and really participating and really trying to let my personality out.
Great advice. I love that. All right. The fifth element of a personal brand, this last one here, what is that?
That is simple graphic components. And I really mean three things by this, and we really can't develop this in great length, but I'll give you a little bit of guidance on this. First of all, it's usually helpful to have a logo that represents your brand. Something that's graphic, that depicts the personality of your brand, that can kind of can be shorthand for your brand. And so we can think of a zillion examples. Some of them are so shorthand, like Apple, that we've used repeatedly here, that all they have is the apple. They don't even have to have the word anymore. And that's sort of the value of a great brand, is that they no longer even need the word. But there's some services where you can get this done. We've represented, or I've recommended before, like 99 Designs. You may find a designer locally that you really understand. We have a designer that we use, Brandon, who totally gets our brand and who now designs all of our logos for all of our products. But a logo is a key thing. Another thing, and we see this violated so much, it's unbelievable, is to have a defined color palette. And again, all this is part of the fifth element, which is simple graphic components. But have a color palette. Every color in the rainbow is not at your disposal as a brand. There needs to be colors that when you see them, they represent your brand. And so for me at this moment, it happens to be blues and grays. And we're contemplating, in fact, by the time this podcast is out, we may have already done this, we're contemplating some other colors, but we're intentional. We try to understand the psychology of color. Colors mean something. You know, there's a reason why Amazon uses an orange buy button. You know, and I promise you, they spent millions of dollars testing green.
Yeah, it's not
red,
an accident.
Blue, it's not an accident. So to have a color palette that's, you know, 5, 6, 7 defined colors, so that everything you design relative to your brand employs that color palette. And it creates consistency, which translates into trust, which translates into sales. And then a third little part of this, subpart of this simple graphic components is be intentional about your fonts. I wish I could show this. Again, we can show it in the video, but I hate to say this, but I'm going to out somebody here. But this is the website of my breeder for my, that I bought my dog from.
Which, and we love Charlie. And we're very thankful
awesome.
To the breeder for
very,
fabulous dog.
She uses every font, I think, in known to man. And it just creates this cacophony of noise. And I feel anxious just looking at the page.
Yeah, it's just too much for the eyes to take in.
So you want to settle on a few fonts.
It almost seems like there's an indecisiveness. So I don't know what to choose, so I'm just going to do them all.
Yeah, or I'm just going to shout and hope you know, something catches your eye.
Which sometimes happens with the color palette as well.
Yes.
I see people kind of, you know, I don't know which colors. I think it would be so beautiful to have the rainbow.
Right, so I'm going to
just use
everything.
Them all.
I can't really decide. So to pick two or at the most three fonts that you use consistently through all your branding is really important as well.
And how many do you use? Do you use two or three?
I actually use three.
Okay.
But I use...
But there's probably one that's predominant, right?
And then... And I have a lot of products, so each of those has their own brand script, their own brand and everything. But at michaelhyatt.com, right now we're using Georgia for our body text font, which is kind of a general serifed font that makes readability really mm-hmm. easy. And then I we use I think Helvetica as the sans serif font, like for headlines. And then we use maybe Arial for captions, but that's pretty much it.
Pretty basic.
That's enough.
I mean,
two's enough, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can use different weights of those fonts, but you got to keep it simple. Otherwise, people get disoriented.
Now, as we wrap up here, as you work with different people, especially on Platform University, because I should just add that at Platform University, you actually walk through this with some of the members at different times, which is so helpful. So for those who are contemplating being a member of Platform University, it might be beneficial for you to go ahead and take on that investment and get a part of that, because you can work through some of this there.
Yeah, it's very helpful to see real live concrete examples of people who have done it wrong, or at least there are things missing, and then to be able to address those directly like Megan and I do in a video, and then take them to the next level.
So when you're doing that, what is there one of these five that you see as the most common mistake?
Well, definitely. Almost everyone we do, they haven't started with the audience. They have no clue who they're writing to.
So they're working on color palettes and logos and
they're getting ahead of themselves.
Yeah, that, but they just don't even know who they're doing it for. And you really can't do that other stuff till you identify your audience.
Exactly right.
This has been excellent. I really enjoyed this today. In fact, as I've been sitting here, and those who are listening don't know this, I've been taking ferocious notes.
I've watched that.
So I have all kinds of to-dos when I get back to my office. So thank you for giving us all that fabulous information today on how to develop a personal brand. That market is busy out there, and we want you to be able to get your message out there. It matters to us. We want to see you succeed. So follow these five elements here. Start with that audience. Don't skip over it. It's so important. And then you can see how you can get a little bit more traction, get a little more attention out there in the market. If you enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all the show notes as well as the full transcript. So I know we gave you tons of information today. You may want to go back and read that transcript. You can get all of this at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you'd prefer to watch us recording this episode, you can watch the entire video also at michaelhyatt.com. Do you have any final thoughts today, Michael?
Yeah, do the hard work of doing this, because it's not easy, it's not sexy, it's easy to go on to other things. But if you don't do this, it'll kind of handicap you all through the development of your business, through the development of your brand. So do this foundational work. It's important.
Good stuff. Thanks for being with us today. Until next time, remember, my friends, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I are going to help you know for sure if you're a leader or how to take your leadership to the next level.